Okay, good afternoon once more. My name is Madana Kumar. I work for the company called IBM. Okay. I'm responsible for the employee development and employee training for all the IBM countries across the world, almost half of it, across Asia, Latin America, and Central and Eastern Europe, Africa, Middle East, and things like that. So that's my responsibility, and it's my pleasure to be here with you. I'm basically from a Hindu background, come to know the Lord about 8 or 9 years back, and I decided that, not my decision, but the Lord called me to say that, look, you got to use whatever talents you have for the benefit of others. So my subject area is leadership. That's what I teach. That is what I help people in the corporate world understand. And so I'm going to speak to you about leadership and how can you use some of the gifts that God has given to you to be truly leaders. All right. I live in Bangalore, and I'm married. My wife's name is Leslie, and I have a son who is about 17 now. He is in 11th standard. So that's my family. Okay. So let's get started. How many of you think you are leaders? Lift up your hands. Some of you are reluctantly doing. Some of you are doing well. All right. How many of you are followers of Jesus Christ? Ah, okay. So that's better. That has got a better response here, right? Now, you know what the Bible tells us? Well, the Bible tells us that if you have lifted your hand for the second question, you don't have an option. You are a leader, whether you like it or not, whether you choose to or not. All right? Do you believe me?
Yeah.
All right. How many of you have heard about this person called John Maxwell? He's a good writer. He's written this Leadership Bible and many of the books, and he's one of the best management gurus, or leadership gurus as we call it, in the world. And he defines leadership as this very simple, okay? We may have various definitions of leadership, right? And that may be one of the reasons why sometimes we are not sure whether we are leaders or not, right? So John Maxwell defines leadership like this. He says, a leader is the one who influences others. Very simple. A leader is the one who influences others. Now put that in context along with what Jesus has asked us to do. Alright? Let's turn to John 15:16. Let's turn to John 15:16 and see what the Lord tells us. Can someone read it quickly? John 15:16. Right. Okay. So, what is and this is said by none other than Jesus Christ. Okay. So it's not secondary. It's not somebody's interpretation and things like that. It's the Lord speaking to us directly, and He says, look, I don't care what you think, okay? You didn't choose me. You are here as followers of me because I chose you, all right? And I chose you for what? Not that you can just sit and relax and enjoy your life. Do all that. I don't care. I don't mind. But I chose you so that you can go and bear fruit, all right? So he is actually, of course, talking to the apostles. He's talking to his disciples, and that's what, and those words are very, very applicable for each one of us, okay? And there are many other biblical terms which tell us that, we need to be leaders, we need to be influencing others, okay? So maybe you can note down some of these things, but to me, John 15:16 is the final word on this. It says that, look, I chose you to go and bear fruit. All right? So, I am the one who chooses you. And this makes, for me, this makes it very simple for me. It is not my responsibility. I don't need to really worry whether I am a leader or whether I should produce results or, you know, I should do something and things like that. Jesus tells me that, look, I chose you so that you can go bear fruit. Matter close. I don't question Jesus. Okay, I'm nobody to question what he says. So I don't look at the logic of it, why me, Lord, and, you know, why not somebody else and all that stuff. I can go on asking that. But Jesus tells me very clearly, look, I chose you, go bear fruit. Alright? So it actually, you know, removes the responsibility from my side and puts the responsibility on him. And all that I got to do is to make sure that I obey him and I go and bear fruit that last. Okay, so this is the basis of what I call as my ministry, which is the Menorah Leadership Ministry. Okay, those of you who have gone to the website would probably have had a chance to look at this, menorahleadership.com, and the concepts are described in that particular website, and some of the things that I'm talking about will be also from this website. Okay, so you have the choice of looking at it later on and clarifying some of your doubts and things like that. So, you know, all of us remember that Jesus said, I am the light of the world, right? But a lot of us very conveniently forget that Jesus also said, you are the light of the world, right? Because we are comfortable, if Jesus says he is the light of the world, it's okay. So you are lighting the world, but we don't want to really remember this. Whereas he says, you know, you are the light of the world. You know, because it puts a responsibility on us. If we are the light of the world, we are expected to spread the light, not hide the light, okay? Because Jesus says that, Jesus goes on to say that no one puts a light under a bowl and hides it, but you are supposed to take the light and go forward onto the world and, you know, show way. So what happens when there is darkness and if you are the only one with the light, what will you do? What will you do if you are the only one with a candle in you and, you know, there is darkness all around? What will you do? Will you hide the light? What will you do? You will hold it. Where will you hold it? At your back? Right? You will hold it up front. You will make sure that others are able to see the light and follow you. Right? So that is what we are expected to do with the talents, with everything that the Lord has given to us. Alright? So, this afternoon, I want us to be convinced that, you're not just somebody. You're not just somebody. Alright? That's the first thought that we need to get out of our mind, that, you know, I'm just somebody, I'm not worthy, right? And I have nothing to offer. Those are the things that we must get out of, because the Lord says, it doesn't matter what you have, or it doesn't matter what you don't have, I have chosen you. That's the reason why you're here. That's the reason why you've decided to follow Jesus Christ. That's the reason why you say he is my Lord. Right? And so once you've done that, we got to obey and go bear fruit. Now how do we do that is what we will learn in the next couple of, next one and a half hours, so that we can, you know, we can probably make use of that God-given gift to bear fruits for him. Okay, so that's the whole purpose of this 2-hour session that I'm going to run. First of all, make you convinced that you are chosen by God and you don't have a choice in that. You have a choice of walking out. Alright? You have a choice of saying that, look, being Christian is difficult, so I don't want to do it. That's the choice which everyone has. Right? And you can exercise that choice anytime. But if you choose to stay in Christianity, if you choose to stay as a follower of Christ, you don't have an option but to influence others. But to influence others. Okay? And when you influence others, you become a leader. Right? Now, you may be influencing others in your own way. We don't need to define it, you know, like Lalu Prasad, the other, you know, influences others, or the Bajrang Dal influences the others. Right? There are various ways of influencing others, and there are ways in which Jesus says you've got to influence others. So we've got to be able to follow that and be able to influence others so that they are able to see the right path. And follow the right path, right? So now this is what. So why do we need to influence others? Why do we care what others think or not? Why do we need to do that? Does it matter? Does it matter what others think? What do you believe? Does it make a difference whether what others think or what others don't think for us? So, let us go to what I call as the... Before we go there, let us also try to understand. We are of course asked to influence others, right? But we are also asked to influence others in an excellent way. Okay? How many of you believe that we serve an excellent God? How many of you believe that we are God's creation and we are created in His image? Right. So the next question is, how many of us can really say that, look, we reflect the excellence of the God that we serve? Now, we serve an excellent God and we are created in His image. We are asked to be imitators of Christ. But can we really and truthfully say that we always reflect that excellence of the God that who created us, who created everything around us? Or do we go around like losers? We go around like people who, you know, have no direction or, you know, whatever. But do we really reflect that excellence? Right? Again, the Bible tells us that, you know, we are asked to be excellent. And also, you know, we can always say, look, okay, give me a Christian community, I will be an excellent person, right? Give me only USI workers among me, I will be the best person around, and, you know, I will reflect the excellence among Christians. Okay? Place me in a neighborhood where only other Christians are living, I'll be a great, excellent Christian. Put me in a church, I'll be an excellent Christian. Right? But you know what? Bible doesn't tell you to do that. God doesn't tell you that, look, be excellent among believers. God tells you, read the 1 Peter 2:12. It doesn't say that go live among believers and do good works. 1 Peter 2:12 says, live such good lives among who? Among the pagans. Okay? Among people who do not believe in me, in the Lord that created the world, and so that they may see the good works that you do and give glory to who? And give glory to the Father in heaven. Right? So, two things I want you to remember. As God's own image, as people who have been created in God's image, as the image of an excellent God, we are asked to be excellent. That is number one. Right? And the number two part is that we are asked to be excellent not just among believers, but among pagans. Okay? Most of these are, you know, all about it. You know, even when Jesus prayed on the last prayer that Jesus did, prayer in the Gethsemane, when he was kneeling, when the sweat was, you know, blood was coming out as sweat drops from him. His prayer was that, Lord, I am not praying that you take out my disciples out of the world. I did not pray that you take them out of the world. He's making it very clear. No ambiguity. He's saying, Lord, I am not praying that you take them out of the world, but all that I pray is you keep them in the world, but protect them from the evil one. Right? So, what I'm trying to say is we cannot ask the Lord to take us out of these problems areas, you know. Especially these are times of persecution. We have problems in Orissa, we have problems in Karnataka, where I'm coming from. This morning I heard that the church, which is very just about 200 yards from my house, that has been attacked, and people have blocked the roads, and my family couldn't go to church. So these are times, you know, where there is a lot of persecution, and the calculations say that probably, you know, 20th century is the one where the maximum number of Christians have been persecuted. If you add up the persecution, it will be probably more than all the 19th century put together. But we don't want to get into the numbers. But the fact is that God continues to ask us to live such good lives among the pagans. And God says, you know, God says that we are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men. Right? And these are things which maybe you can note down. So remember a couple of things. God is excellent. I am created in God's image, so I got to be excellent. Right? God has chosen me and sent me to bear fruit. I don't have a choice. And hence I am going to influence others so that I will, you know, probably bring them into the Lord's kingdom. So these are a couple of things that I want you to remember before we get into what we need to do. Okay? So any questions till now? Are we in agreement? If you are not in agreement, tell me. Because we need to, you know, get these things clear before we can really go forward and find out how do we do this. How do we really become excellent as the Lord calls us? You know, what happens is a lot of Christians have got a problem with the word success, right? Because success is seen in the worldly sense. You know, it could be linked with money, it could be linked with position, it could be linked with social status, it could be linked with material possessions that you have and things like that. And when that happens, obviously, you know, we say that, look, that's not Christian, right? And it's okay. But what a lot of Christians do is then they go on the other extreme of saying that, look, you know, I am unworthy. I cannot do anything. I can't change this world, you know, and go into a hole and just be what the other religions call as monks, you know, go become hermits. I will do my prayers 24 hours a day, and you know, I will be quiet. All right, I will not hurt anybody, but I'm not going to do anything to influence others. That's not Christianity. That's not the call that God has given to us. Right? God doesn't ask us to be monks and, you know, go and sit in a monastery and pray for 24 hours a day. God says, go sit among the pagans, do such good works so that they will see what you do and then praise God in heaven. Right? So we got to remember that, and we got to see how we can do this influencing. And this is what I call as what is called as the FOLD, Framework of Leadership Development. Okay? So this is the one it is given in your this thing. So let me take you through this a little bit, because it is important for you to understand this. Why do we need to influence others? Why do we need to understand about ourselves? Why do we need to worry what we are? Okay, so that's what we are going to see. So now we live in a world which is full of people, right? So if we have to do anything, can we do everything ourselves? Can we make changes by ourselves? Can we change the system? Can we change, you know, the laws? Can we do it ourselves? We got to do it through people, right? And now, how many of you are working? All of you are working in some corporate office or somewhere? All of you are working people now? Okay, right? In an organization, right? Whether you like it or not, why have they hired you? Whether you think you are getting a high paid salary or not, the organizations always believe they pay you well, right? So, but why do you think they have hired you and pay you salaries? Sorry? So? But just because you're capable, they will pay you money? Okay. Okay, in other words? Sorry? Get their work done, yes. Right? Of course, they choose you because you believe you have capabilities, because they believe that your capabilities can be used for, converted into results. Okay? So, they hire you because they want results, right? Now, some of you, I'm sure some of you will grow up to become leaders in the organization, and I wish all of you will grow up to become leaders in the organization. Today, some of you may be producing individual results. You put in your effort, you get the results. But as you grow up, you will not be able to get these results by yourself. Even today, most of you will be thinking that, look, I can't produce this result myself. I need somebody else's help, you know. Maybe I'm doing one part of the coding, somebody else, you know, if you are in a software organization, or you may be part of the process of things. Somebody passes on to you, you pass on to somebody else, whatever it is. And so actually you produce results. So one is, the first thing is, you are chosen in an organization because you have something to give, and the organization believes that they can convert that into results, which will be business results, which will convert into profit for them. Right? And now, so whether you are in a secular world, or whether you are in a, I don't know if any of you are really working full-time working in a Christian organization. No, all of you are in corporate, right? So even if you work in a Christian organization, right? I want us to remember this. We are in an organization because we are expected to produce results. Right? Because Jesus says so. Go bear fruit. He doesn't say go sit and pray for 24 hours. He says go bear fruit. Influence others and go bear fruit. So we got to be producing results. Right? Now the question is, in this world of today, especially where we talk about knowledge workers and, you know, knowledge industries and things like that, do you think you can produce results by yourself? Can you really produce good results or excellent results as God wants us to by yourself? It's not possible. It is just not possible. We got to be able to produce results through the people who are around us. So we are always part of a team. We are always part of a team, whether we are in a church, whether we are in a Christian organization, whether we are in a secular organization, whether we are at home. We produce results through the people around us. Okay? And that's where, you know, the team comes into picture. Alright? So, because we are not God. God can produce results by himself. Right? He doesn't need anyone's help, but we are not. We are created in his image, but he expects us to work among others and produce results. So, if we have to produce the fruits, okay? Remember John 15:16. If you have ever doubt whether, as a Christian, should I be worried about results, read John 15:16. Memorize it. Okay? If you know John 15:16, you will not question whether am I supposed to produce results as a Christian. Because a lot of Christians believe that, look, as a Christian, I don't need to be worried about results. I just need to put in effort, which is fine. Like, we need to put in effort, but remember, God asks us to bear fruits. Okay? So we got to be going there. So once we know that, okay, I have to produce the fruits, then the commonsensical thing is that the way others feel to be around us, and we produce results through people, the thing that we need to remember is the way others feel to be in our company is what impacts the results. Now, okay, do you believe in this? If people are happy to be around us, will as a team, will we produce results, better results? How many of you are, followers of IPL? We just got over the right. What was big in Rajasthan Royals? Wasn't the big? It wasn't the team with a large number of, it's all unknown people, right? So what made them big? People like Swapnil Adnokar, you know, he is just probably is as tall as the stumps itself, right? That guy makes such a huge difference suddenly. While, you know, people like Dravid or people like our Dada, and they're gone. Right? What makes a difference? What makes a difference is, as a team, they are proud to belong to each other. They are proud to belong together, right? So that's what this is about. If you feel together as a team, if you feel great, things will happen in a team, right? So the way others feel to be in our company makes a difference in the fruits that we can produce. Okay. Now, a lot of times what happens is, you know, there are certain things which are common sense, right? But somehow we don't want to believe common sense, so we pay very very highly to what we call as consultants, like me, for example. And to prove that common sense is right, okay? So this particular thing that, the way others feel to be in our company impacts the fruits, impacts the results, is proven through research. Okay, there are Harvard Business School studies which prove that there is a relationship between the way people feel to be around as in a company and the business results that an organization produces. And this is a concept, what I'm talking to you is a concept which corporates use very heavily. We call it the organizational climate. Okay? So I don't want to get into that research, but I just want to make sure that, you know, that this is proven by research, that the way people feel to be around in our company impacts the results that, you know, we produce as a group. All right. So the next question is, if that is true, what makes people feel the way to be around us? What makes the difference in how people feel to be around us? Okay. The answer again is, if, for example, if I am rude, if I am a rude person, will people want to be around me? If I am a caring person, probably yes. If I am fun, you know, if I am very jovial and, you know, or if I am very generous, I give money, I give food, you know, nice biryani every time you meet me and all that. So, the way I behave, right, the way I behave impacts the way people feel to be around me. So this is a relationship. The way I behave impacts the way others feel to be in my company, and the way others feel to be in my company produces the results that as a team we produce. Do you see the linkage? Okay. So I behave in certain ways, and the way I behave decides how other people will feel to be in my company, right? And the way other people behave to be in my, like to be in my company decides what are the fruits that I decide, as a team we get. Now the question is, what makes me behave the way I do? Any guesses? Why do we behave in particular ways? What are the things that impact my behavior? Sorry? Sure. Okay. What else? Let's come to the real world. What are the things which makes me behave the way I behave? Typically. Sorry? Sorry?
Situations.
The situations, okay? Yeah? If situations make me behave in certain ways that I behave.
The culture which we born and brought up in.
The culture that I am born and brought up in, yes, very true. Okay? Yeah, the perception that I think it will make on others, you know, or the impression that I want to make on others will make me behave in particular ways, right? If I am unmarried and I meet a beautiful girl, I want to act nice so that probably, hopefully I will make a good impression on her and, you know, things like that, okay? So, what else? What are the other things which make me feel, you know, which make me behave? Okay, so we actually saw this. So this is actually what the person is, this entire white circle that we see here. So how I behave is based on what I am and the situation that God places us in. Okay? Or in other words, we have a marker here. You have a marker? Okay. Remember this formula, those of you who know the formula can remember this. Now B stands for behavior, okay? Behavior is, this is for function of, okay? So behavior is a function of the person and situation, okay? Those of you who are good in math should be able to remember this formula very simply. Behavior is a function of person and situation. Now, tell me, how many of us really can control the S part of it? How many of us can really control the situation that we are in? Is it in our control? So, behavior is a function of person and situations. So, how much control do we have on the situation? Absolutely no control, right? We don't choose our parents. A lot of times we don't choose our spouses. We don't choose our children. We don't choose our colleagues. We can't choose our bosses when we go to an office, right? So the choices that we have are pretty much limited, right? And and it is God who places us in those situations. And of course, He has His own plans. He places us with a particular purpose. So in this equation, where do we have control? We have control on this. Okay? That's what I want us to remember today. That I don't have control over this, right? But I do have control over this because this is me. This is not external to me, this is internal to me. Okay? And that is what I want us to try and understand today. Right? What is this and how is it that I can do to improve or change that. Okay? So remember, the way we behave is based on what we are as a person, as an individual, and the situation that the Lord places us in. And assuming that this is a constant, or this I don't have control over, I need to try and see what is this made up of. And that is what it shows here. Alright? So what I am is made up of what we call as the competencies that we have. Okay? In my website you will find a lot of information on competencies, basic competencies. For example, for a Christian worker, the basic competencies involve, of course, communication skills, you know, written skills, time management skills, finance management skills and stuff like that. And also for Christians, the basic knowledge of Bible. What do we understand of the Bible? Do we at least know what the basic concepts of Christianity is and things like that? And beyond that, of course, there is what I call as the leadership competencies. How do we go beyond that, beyond this particular basic things, and try to be a leader? But above that is what I call as our personality. Okay? And I'm going to talk about it a little more in detail right now. So we'll leave it that. So again, coming back to this, remember, behavior is a function of person and situation, and a person is made up of all this. But what I want us to remember is, at the core of all this, at the core of the person is what we call as our identity. Right? Now, I say identity because not all of us probably can claim to have Christian identity always. Okay? But as a Christian, what we need to be worried about is what is the Christian identity that we have. So that's what we will try and see. Today, in the next one and a half hours, what we are going to try and see is just these two. Right? What is our Christian identity and what is our personality, and how do we use it for God's glory? Okay, that is all that we can afford to see today. Of course, there are a lot of things that I can do on these competencies, on what we call as the leadership styles, on the organizational climate and things like that, but we don't have time for that. So I'm going to stay with the basics of what is a Christian identity and what is our personality. Alright? So any questions on this? I want this equation to be, you know, understood by you, because whatever we study later is dependent on this. We need to be able to understand that what I am internally impacts the way I behave, and the way I behave impacts the way others feel to be around me, and the way others feel to be around me impacts the results that I can produce for my Lord, for God's kingdom. That conviction has to be there with us. If that conviction is not there, or if that connection is not there, then we will not be able to, you know, really understand why am I worrying about my Christian identity? Why am I worrying about personality? Alright? So that question first needs to be answered and clear before we go into the next part of the session. Okay? Just tell me, when do we need to give a break? Okay? 3:50. Alright. Okay. So let's do this. So let's start from the middle. Let's start from the middle and see what is the identity that we are talking about. What is Christian identity? So first is, why do we need to know this? Why do we need to know about ourselves? Okay? Let's read Psalm 51:6. It's good for us to go back to the Bible once in a while. Psalm 51:6. You desire truth where? You desire truth in the innermost part of me. Right? So that's what the psalmist says. Okay? Now, we are God's creation, right? And God has not created us to be zeros, remember? I keep telling you that. Okay? God has created us to be living, breathing people, and God wants us to serve Him, not because He is forcing us to do. Does God force us to do? What does Revelation 3:20 tell us? What does Revelation 3:20 tell us? Right. So who is saying this? Jesus Christ. Right? So Jesus Christ says, look, I am here at the door, I am knocking at the door. If you don't open the door, I am breaking it open and coming in. Is that what he says? No. He says, I will wait at the door. Right? And if you open the door and let me in, I will come and sup with you, and then you can sup with me and be part of that banquet that, you know, I have prepared for you. My Father has prepared for you. So he's not going to force into your heart. He's not going to force into your life. He wants you to choose him by free will. Right? Now, the question is, so God, all of us know that. I mean, by Christians, by now you should be knowing that. Look, we say, look, God, I surrender to you. Right? I surrender to you. Now, if I don't know myself fully well, what am I really surrendering? What do you think I'm surrendering? I don't know what is my temptations. I don't know what are my weaknesses. I don't know what are my strengths. So what am I really surrendering? Yeah. So, you know, if we do not know ourselves well individually, we are actually surrendering superficially. Right? Think about David. The man whom God called as a person of my own heart, right? God had he picked him up from nowhere and made him the king of Israel, and probably, you know, and you know, made him in the chain of descendants for Jesus Christ, one of the best kings that ever lived. God calls him a man of my own heart. But what happens to him? What happens to him when he sees Bathsheba? Right? Now, he falls into sin, and it is because of this temptation which he did not probably know himself. He surrenders later. He says, Lord, I have sinned. Right? Do what you want to be with me. In your eyes, I have sinned. But before that, look at Peter. Peter, the man on whom the Lord said, look, Peter, I'm going to build this church on you. Today, if he exists, it is because the church is built on the rock, which is Peter. But look at Peter. You know, when Peter says, Lord, I'm willing to lay down my life for you. Can you place this? Somewhere Peter says, right? Lord, I'm willing to lay down my life for you. And Jesus turns around and tells Peter, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crows. Now, if I am Peter, what would be my reaction? Here I am telling the Lord, I am willing to die for you, and you turn around and tell me, Peter, it's good that you told me this, but before the dawn, today, tonight, you're going to deny me three times. Lord, are you joking? Didn't you hear what I said? I said, I lay down my life for you, and is this how you react? What Peter was not aware was those inner fears which were within him, which he has not been able to conquer yet. God had his own plans to conquer them. God had his own plans to purify him and, you know, and make him the strongest foundation for the church. But at that point in time, Peter did not know what was within him. Okay? Of course, this is just two biblical characters which I talked to you about, but there are many others, many, many church leaders who knew God very well, who knew the world very well, but because they didn't know their own weaknesses, their own fears, they have really, you know, gone ahead and done mistakes and pulled down many others. And something that we need to remember is what Jesus tells us in Matthew 18:6. Right? Anyone remembers what Jesus tells us in Matthew 18:6? I love Jesus. Jesus sometimes, you know, he doesn't mince words. So let's turn to Matthew 18:6 and read it. Let's see what the Lord tells us. And this is very important for us to be leaders, because
anyone causes one of these little ones to believe in me, says, it would be better for him to have a large hailstone around his neck and to be crowned on the head.
Right. Jesus a lot of times does plain speaking. He doesn't want him to be misunderstood. So he says things very, very clearly, very, you know, aptly. He says, look, if any of you cause these little people to sin, beware. It is better that you tie a large stone around your neck and go drown yourself in the sea. Alright? So, that's the seriousness with which Jesus takes leaders who mislead others. Okay? So, Remember, we are called to be leaders. We are called to excellence because we are created in Lord's image, and we are supposed to influence others. But it comes with a warning that if we influence others wrongly, if we influence others and cause others to be misled, there is a warning which comes with that. So we got to be careful as to what we... So that is why, you know, the concept comes and says that, look, I need to know about myself first before I can really understand and lead others to God. Okay, so that's the reason why I'm bringing in so much time in what, understanding what is it that we need to... Of course, that's just not my saying. There are a few quotes here which other Christian leaders agree that, yes, we need to, you know, we need to know ourselves. I'll just leave it for you to read. There is a quote from John Calvin. There is something by Saint Augustine, Thomas Merton, and a great man of God called Selwyn Hughes, who used to write the Every Day with Jesus. Any of you have read this, Every Day with Jesus? It's a daily devotional which he passed away, of course, a couple of years back. But this booklet is still available, and it's a great reading. Is there here? Yeah? Okay, good. So, and it is his. So, I want us to be convinced of one thing, that, you know, knowing self, our own weaknesses, our own strength, is not unchristian. Now, there's a gate. You can always use this knowledge in a wrong way. If you want to know about yourself so that you can boast about yourself or impress somebody else, or go for gain material gains because of the knowledge that you have about ourselves, that definitely is wrong. That will fall under the category of what Jesus warns against in Matthew 18:6. But what we are talking about is what we call as transformational knowledge. Knowledge about ourselves, so that I know my strengths and weaknesses and I surrender it to God, and God says, look, this is what I know about myself, this is my strength, this is my weaknesses. You take it, you do what you want with it, and make me an instrument in your kingdom so that I can bear fruit for you. So that is the knowledge that we need to be looking at. Not that, you know, again, everything in this world can be used for good or bad. Almost everything. Right? And that's where even the self-knowledge can be used wrongly. And that's where actually probably a lot of Christians stay away from even knowing about self, because they say that, look, the moment I know about myself, I can become proud. I can misuse. Of course, there is possibility of that, but then God will help us not to do that. So remember, we need to know about ourselves. So let's move into identity, Christian identity. What is identity? How do we have our identity? So every one of us is born with an identity, right? And typically, we are always born with a defective identity, because the identity that we are born with initially is based on our parentage, the family that we are born in, the relationship that we are in, in this thing, our siblings, our society, the educational background that we have, and all that stuff. And that is defective identity. Right. Now, what Bible asks us to do is to shed that identity and be born again. And that's really the meaning of being born again. Okay, that's really the meaning of when we say that, look, I am dead and I am born with Christ. What really we mean is that I'm shedding myself of my defective identity with which I am born, and I am taking on the true Christian identity that you want me to adopt. So that's the thing that you need to be aware of in that. So and what we need to do is to shed this natural identity and move into what we call as the Christian identity. Right? And what that Christian identity is very clear here, that we are sons, and because we are sons, we are heirs. Right? We inherit the kingdom of God because of what Jesus Christ did, because of the right that Jesus Christ gave us. So we need to be able to live that. We need to be able to understand that. Like, we are just not, you know, we are just not victims of what somebody does, but we are really true heirs to the kingdom of God because of what Jesus Christ did. So remember these words. We are children, then we are heirs. Okay? And we died, but we are risen with Christ in God. and Galatians. We are no longer a slave. Remember, you know, this is written in the context of the Romans, because in Romans, a Roman rich person can have any amount of children, but they don't get the son status unless the father calls them and tells them that, okay, from today onwards you are a son. Otherwise they live like slaves, just like any other slave. They don't have any inheritance, they don't get any privileges till they are called into the sonship, as it is called. But because of what Jesus Christ did, we are directly got that access to the sonship of God. Right? So that's something which we need to remember, and that's the question of identity that we need to be aware about. Alright, so let's do a small exercise. I've been talking too long, so let's do a small exercise here. Alright, so what I want you to do is in your handbook, in your handouts, turn to, can I get a copy of the handout please? Thank you. A lot of what I have spoken about till now is there in the first few pages, but let us turn to page number 5 of the handout. Page number 5. Okay, there are two questions there. So I want us to split ourselves into four groups. Okay, quickly. So please count 1, 2, 3, 4. You're four. Okay. You want to participate? 1, 2, 3. Okay. You want to participate? All right. So let's come all the ones here, twos here, threes this side, four this corner. Quickly, let's turn around. Ones, twos, threes, and fours.